Okay, thought experiment time. Cast your mind into the very near future. Self-driving cars are everywhere on the streets of Boston. The upside? There's a lot less honking and no one making left-hand turns from the right-hand lane without a turn signal anymore. But the downside? A computer is now making decisions about who lives and who dies. What do I mean? Here's an example. Say the car's brakes suddenly fail. You're in a self-driving car and the brakes suddenly fail. And right at that time, it also just happens that a bunch of students jaywalk across the street. Should the car swerve to save all of the students, but maybe kill you? Or should it plow through the students, but leave you in the car unharmed? Well, that is a moral dilemma that will soon have to be solved millions of times a day by machines, which is why MIT's Media Lab has set up a website and experiment that is crowdsourcing how humans make these moral decisions to inform how we program future autonomous vehicles. The website is called The Moral Machine, and we've got a link to it at radioboston.org. Iyad Rahman is a professor at MIT's Media Lab, and he's co-creator of this research, and he joins us now. Welcome to Radio Boston, Professor.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so first of all, explain to us, when we say moral machine or the moral machine, what exactly do we mean? What are you asking?
Well, we are saying that very soon machines run by computer programs will make decisions that have life or death consequences to individuals. And it will not happen in a small controlled environment like a factory. It will happen in urban environments at a very large scale. And I think this brings up very interesting questions pertaining to the trust of the public in these systems. Mm-hmm. So we're interested in understanding what is it that the public are concerned about when they think of cars driving around, pieces of metal in our urban in cities. And I think it's a very good question. It's very pertinent to ask this question before we adopt such technology.
Right. And so you're going about basically through the Moral Machine website, you're asking people to take a test that provides a variety of scenarios, right? And they're relatively simple scenarios. An autonomous vehicle has a brake failure most of the time, mm-hmm. and the car has to decide whether to swerve or whether to continue ahead. And the difference in each one of the scenarios is who the potential victims could be, right?
That's right. So basically, if you think about real life accidents, obviously they're extremely complex things. There aren't two options. You know, the car doesn't have to decide between just swerving or staying on course. It often, has a bunch of options possible, and it's making very complex calculations with uncertain outcomes. But we wanted to simplify matters so that normal people can engage with these questions and basically give us their opinion. So sometimes we put the trade-off between people in the car and people on the road. Other times it's two groups of pedestrians that you might hit either by going forward or swerving into another group of pedestrians. And we vary all sorts of things like their ages and their numbers and their genders and so on.
Well, I mean, there's interesting things like homeless versus a professional. You throw in the size of a person, a quote-unquote large man sometimes.
What we're trying to do here is obviously we would never take these what people say and suggest this to be programmed into the cars directly. You know, I don't think we should crowdsource or take a public opinion poll on whose life matters more. But I think what we're trying to do is confront people with the difficulty of those choices, and that if they think that none of these things should matter, then we would like to know that, and we'd like to give them the opportunity to express this.
Hmm. So you've had several million people so far take the Moral Machines scenario test. And what are you beginning to find in terms of what people say they'd prefer in the behavior, if I could put it that way, of an autonomous vehicle?
Well, I think we're still at an early stage of analyzing the data, but we do have more than 22 million individual decisions now from people from over 160 countries. So this is one of the largest ethical surveys ever done in history, which was kind of a surprise for us. But we're beginning to learn some interesting things. One of them is that people by and large agree that you should minimize total harm. That's a good thing to do. That if you could swerve, for example, even if you harm the person in the car, if that leads to fewer deaths, that's what the car should do. But what we're also learning is that if people imagine themselves in the car, then they would disagree with that.
Oh, so are you saying you found out that human beings are morally inconsistent? Is that what we're saying?
That's right. And of course, this is not a surprise, but I think it does highlight to people that this is something we have to work out as a society together.
Well, so this is a, I mean, I use a joking tone, but this is a very serious, one of the very serious early conclusions that you found, that while you say that people would like to see a car on the road that reduces total harm, they're also telling at the same time they're not likely to buy that kind of car because as a passenger, reducing total harm means that they actually might end up being harmed within, inside the car. So like, so what does that mean for developers and sellers of future autonomous vehicles?
Well, I think what it means is that the problem is not straightforward. So it's not something that we should leave to a programmer or an engineer because they're simply not trained to think about these problems. These problems are legislative problems. They are problems of the design of the social contract, how we all get along and balance different priorities. You know, if you think about it, we already face these questions. When we set a speed limit, we are increasing, we are reducing the convenience for some people who are going to get home a little bit later, but in exchange, we're going to increase public safety. And we can increase public safety even more by banning cars completely, but we don't do that either. So I think as a society, we somehow navigate these things and find a balance between the interests of different stakeholders, and we need to have a similar conversation here.
Well, do you anticipate that some of the answers or trends might change the more detail and variability you put into the questions themselves? And I say that, like, let me give you an example. Like right now in the Moral Machine website, in either scenario, in every scenario, either choice, someone dies, right? But in truth, in automobiles, most time people would be wearing seatbelts, they have airbags, etc. So perhaps in some cases the person in the car is just safer, their risk is lower. So do you think you'd get different answers if you started introducing those shades of granularity in terms of the types of scenarios you could see?
I agree. Yeah, I do think so. So I think that obviously we are trying to be a little provocative by forcing a choice here. I think in the real world, things are going to be risk assessments with a lot of uncertainty. So the choice could be you might slightly increase the risk to the passenger, but you would significantly reduce risk to the pedestrians. Should you do that or not? Well, it depends on how big that risk is. And the calculation becomes more nuanced. But I think the fact remains that it is a trade-off. Mm. So what is it? Is it injury for one person versus, you know, or for five people versus a death of one person? How do you actually account for these things? And how do you observe afterwards as a, you know, if you're a regulator, how do you actually check that a particular car maker is abiding by whatever it is that society has decided is acceptable?
Right. I mean, so Mercedes-Benz a while ago had said that initially a high-ranking person at Mercedes-Benz, correct me if I'm wrong, said that you know, we know that there's at least one person that you can save in every autonomous vehicle, and that's a passenger or a driver, so the car should make decisions to privilege the people in the car.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, the person was, I mean, a little bit sort of pushed to make that call on the spot and said something to the effect that if you are certain you could save the person in the car, then you should do so. But Mercedes subsequently withdrew that statement and clarified that, you know, they would want to do what is legal and what is socially acceptable. Now, what is socially acceptable is something we still don't know, and this is what I'm hoping that we could achieve with surveys like the ones we're running.
Yeah. So let me ask you, so on that point, there's some very big overarching questions here when we're talking about morality in machines of any kind, but especially with self-driving cars, because we are going to see many of them on the roads in the not-too-distant future. I mean, right now we've been having a conversation that presupposes that human moral codes are the ones that we should follow. But shouldn't we be taking the opportunity to maybe making cars even more moral than human beings are?
Well, I think if we can, yes, we should. And here is how it works. I think, first of all, technologists predict that these cars will increase safety full stop. You know, will eliminate up to 90% of accidents. So from my perspective, I think we should adopt them as soon as we can. And we should make sure that our inability to make a good call on very unusual, rare situations, like a dilemma, should not prevent us from adopting the safer technology that would ultimately save many more lives. Mm. So that's the first thing. But the second point, which responds to your question, is that nowadays, if we are faced with this situation as human drivers, we simply cannot make that choice. We are too slow, essentially, and we're going to use our gut feeling and act in some random fashion. And we decided also not to blame people for these things because it is an accident. That's why we call it an accident. But as technology becomes more reliable and cars can make those judgments fast enough, then in a way, it's creating a new moral imperative for us to design things more thoughtfully.
Oh, so I've been wrestling with something all day here. And that is, you know, in common parlance, when we talk about morality, we tend to use very black and white language, moral absolutes, moral codes. But of course, in truth, as you were talking about earlier, there are many circumstances surrounding each moral decision that human beings themselves make as individuals. But by virtue of trying to program a moral sensibility into a machine, we are actually trying to codify an amorphous thing into a set of rules, right? And aren't we trying to essentially do the impossible?
In a way, but in a way, it's kind of it's. I think it's the ultimate challenge for humanity, because once you are asked to describe it in such detail that a machine can follow these rules, then you can no longer hide behind ambiguity or sort of hope that fate will decide things somehow through a flip of a coin. You have to make a call. You have to program things in a particular way. So in a way, I think by thinking about how to program artificial intelligence to make life or death decisions, we're learning something about ourselves and our own morality.
Hmm. Now, ultimately, when it comes to the regulations that will emerge surrounding these cars, I mean, your research also found that that it seemed as if Americans were somewhat resistant to the government making decisions on how these cars, or sort of the moral rules that these cars follow?
Well, I think what our survey found is that if the government forced all cars to minimize total harm, which means that in some circumstances, very rare circumstances, it may sacrifice you, people wouldn't buy them. And I think that's a typical conflict between our individual self-interest and the public good, which is in this case safety.
But also, it's not a great idea, I think, for the car companies to be making these decisions, right?
Exactly. I think somebody has to make those decisions. And I think it's better that we talk about it rather than assume the problem away and that some programmer somewhere will make the right call. So for me, I would rather discuss the issue in public and engage the public and giving them a voice, essentially, in this debate, not necessarily a final voice, but a voice that informs legislators and thoughtful and trustworthy people in our community.
And this needs to happen now, right? Because the technology is coming. So what's the next step in your research?
Well, the next step now is for us to understand, to study the data that we've collected. And one of the interesting things that we're beginning to find is that there are cultural differences. So if you recall, we've collected data from 160 countries, and they're not all the same. Some countries care more about think the car has an obligation to its owner more than other countries. And I will not comment yet on details until we've conducted the analysis, but I'm very excited to look into it.
The cultural complications of moral absolutes. Wow. Well, Iyad Rawan is an associate professor at MIT's Media Lab, where he's part of the team behind MIT's Moral Machine, a crowdsourcing project on the moral decisions made by machines. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That's it for today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.